I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground Broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. Who knows if war here in this region is because Donald Trump has been blackmailed by Israel, as exposed on this show recently. Epstein files that US Attorney General Pam Bondi bothered to release continue to shock anyone naive enough to believe NATO nation elites aren't corrupt, depraved purveyors of fake democracy and liberty. Millions of pages, emails, videos and images uncover lies that we have always sought to expose here on Going Underground. Even possible new trilateral talks on Ukraine to avert wider European war are in the context of Epstein emails that show Anglo-American elites vying to destroy Russia. This month, UK police arrested the brother of King Charles III, who is no longer allowed to be called Prince Andrew. And then there's the UK Prime Minister's Iraq war-supporting ambassador to Washington, Lord Peter Mandelson. He has yet again been accused of corruption following Epstein file revelations. Both Prince Andrew and Mandelson deny wrongdoing. Mandelson was released on bail, and Andrew was released but is under further investigation. Joining me now from Lewes in Britain is friend of the show and former UK Crime Prevention Minister in the British Home Office, the Right Honourable Norman Baker, is a Privy Councillor, theoretically an advisor to King Charles. Norman, thanks so much for coming on. Right Honourable Norman Baker, I should call you. The war may be on in this region. Starmer, of course, supporting demonstrations in Iran, the by-elections in Britain. But let's just get straight to the fact that even before we get to Andrew, Prince Andrew, whatever he calls himself, these days, your reaction to the arrest of Britain's ambassador to Washington, because you triggered Mandelson's first resignation when you exposed his corruption over passport selling for the O2 Stadium in London.
Actually, that was the second resignation. There were so many, it's easy to lose track. The first one was over a bank loan. But yes, I did expose that, and he had to go. And what he was doing was he was accepting money for the Millennium Dome in order to make that viable, as he could. And in return, he was helping with their passport applications for the Hinduja brothers. And of course, there was no personal benefit from that, but there was a benefit to the state. And really, we shouldn't be selling passport applications, should we, and selling nationality to people.
I mean, clearly, the surprise would be to viewers all around the world, why is it people are allowed to come back into public life repeatedly? You said that previous time is the second time over the Millennium Dome after being corrupt. Why is that?
Well, I think it was a big mistake from Gordon Brown to take him on as business secretary after he'd been sacked twice. And also, there were some questions about his activities in the European Parliament in terms of his expenses. So it was an unwise decision. I thought the thought presumably was that he would give knowledge and gravitas to government. That's what was thought at the time. And similarly, I thought that Keir Starmer, when he appointed him as ambassador, thought that he was able to deal with a difficult American precedent in a way that other people wouldn't do, given his experience in government. But it was unwise. I mean, Mandelson is a bit like Rasputin. You can throw him to the bottom of the river a few times and he keeps popping up again.
But why is it? And does that mean that Sir Keir Starmer, I've been on a show with him on the BBC in my day, is he stupid or corrupt himself? Why?
I don't think he's corrupt. I don't think he's corrupt. I don't think he's stupid. I think he made a calculated judgment, which was wrong, that it was better to have Mandelson's experience and risk the downsides associated with him. Clearly, there was insufficient assessment made of Mandelson's involvement with Jeffrey Epstein. That was a mistake. But it's fair to say to Starmer that the appointment of Mandelson was thought to be a shrewd move, not simply by Starmer himself, but by people in opposition parties.
So people trafficking didn't enter into his equation of how suitable this choice of ambassador to Washington would be. I mean, I have to say, this is Keir Starmer who supported the genocide in Gaza, Cyprus being used for the warplanes being used to kill children. I mean, it's not surprising, arguably, in the rest of the world that Sir Keir Starmer has no morality. But specifically, we know that Starmer knew about the fact that Mandelson was consorting with a convict.
We did know that, and clearly insufficient attention was given to the detail of that. Starmer's line, which we'll find out how true it is in due course, is that Mandelson lied again and again when he was vetted, and his word was accepted. Now, that it may be true, and it may well be that there's insufficient rigour applied to the vetting process. We'll find out. In terms of the Starmer support for the Americans in Gaza and Israelis, I mean, I find that regrettable, reprehensible in some ways. What I would say is that Starmer was trying to balance the relationship with the United States, which is extremely difficult with someone as mercurial and egotistical as Trump in the White House. And to be fair to Starmer, I understand that the British have refused permission for Diego Garcia to be used as a launch pad for an attack on Iran, because in international law, it would be illegal. And that's why Trump has now come out and thrown his toys out of the pram about Chagos Islands.
Yeah, my understanding is that the Chagos Islands deal has been ripped up. Starmer's capitulated again on that. Specifically on the Mandelson issue, what does it say about Parliament where you served? His lawyers, Mishkon, said, oh, the police had reneged on some kind of deal that had previously been made, that he would voluntarily go to the police station. And just explain it to me. And the Speaker of the House of Commons is this character who is supposed to be impartial, but is a member of one of the parties, tipped off the police, and then the police apologized to him. I mean, what does this show about the way civic life is operating in Britain?
Well, let me say two good things about this episode. First of all, someone has been arrested and taken to a police
Mandelson.
Station.
Mandelson. Starmer
and
hasn't
a public
yet.
Figure. No. Well, I don't think Starmer's guilty of the Epstein things. We've had two people, a prince of the royal blood, if you like, and a member of the House of Lords who was a cabinet minister, who have been arrested in public and taken to the police station for questioning. Now, that's two people more than we've seen in the United States. And allegedly hundreds of women who have been affected
that
in abuse.
That seems to be
the
big talk over there, isn't it? We're better than the old colony of the United States. We just forget about the fact that no one has been arrested. You're right, after the release of the subsequent 3 million documents. It's still showing what sort of corruption exists at the highest levels of British society, isn't it? And the network of forces there.
There is. I mean, the whole Epstein farrago has demonstrated that a great deal of power in the world rests with billionaires and people who are lacking in moral judgment and interested simply in making money for themselves, and are able to influence politicians and civil servants and others in positions of power right across the world, either by money or by influence, simply associating with them and freebies, or by some other unwelcome means, perhaps, of some entrapment. So, you know, I'm afraid the picture from the Epstein files is a deeply depressing one about how the world operates.
And how's it going down in Britain, the release of these files? The media actually, you know, arguably doing a relatively good job, not showing the Israel connection, not connecting the dots as far as the persuasion operation on Trump to go to war with Iran. But it's doing a good job at exposing the elites finally, or some degree of hypocrisy by these very newspapers that were lauding him. Lots of journalists used to say Mandelson was a great, great politician.
Well, newspapers have a short memory, as you'll know, Afshan. They say one thing one week, and then they say completely opposite 3 months later when new evidence appears. They are doing a reasonable job at exposing the Epstein files, and I think it is okay, there's only two people arrested, but they have arrested people in this country, and they have done so in public, and they are public figures. And I think that's a sign of sorts that the system, in a sense, is working. Parliament's discussing the matter. Parliament's debating it. Andrew was subjected to a huge dismissal by relevant minister Chris Bryant in the Commons. So, you know, the system's not perfect, but it is responding to what's been released in a way that the Americans aren't.
Yeah, I mean, even here in the UAE, former Prince Andrew arrested over misconduct. UK Royal has faced allegations over links to Jeffrey Epstein. One should say that obviously he denies it. He was released under investigation, not under bail. You might have to explain that as a former crime prevention minister. And these allegations are over corruption as a trade envoy rather than sex trafficking.
Well, I think, yes, they are. The allegation is misconduct in public office and related to the Epstein file revelations that suggest that both Andrew and Peter Mandelson were providing information of a sensitive and highly important nature to Epstein to pass on to JP Morgan and others in the States. And I've said publicly, there was an article for the Daily Mail the other day, that's treason. It's a very serious matter. And so I'm glad that the police have taken the matter seriously. As to why they were arrested, incidentally, rather than interviewed under caution, which is what Mandelson wanted, I understand that it makes it easier to secure warrants to investigate properties and look for evidence within those properties, which obviously being interviewed under caution doesn't allow. After Mandelson's suggestion that the police are behaving wrongly by somehow not agreeing to interview him at a time of his convenience, well, tough. You know, I'm sorry, the police must do their job. And if they want to come and arrest him at 5 o'clock in the morning, which they didn't, by the way, they didn't let him have breakfast first, I think, then that's fine. You know, it's for the police to decide how to handle these matters, not Mandelson to determine it.
And as for MI5, the intelligence services, they didn't have any of this kind of information, that market-sensitive data was being leaked to American investment banks over situations that relate directly to the British people, in a way. And would King Charles himself, the person you advise as a Privy Councillor, he would have no knowledge of this? I mean, there is on record that he did know about the Virginia Giuffre allegations in 2019. What was MI5 doing? Do they not know anything about this?
Well, I don't know whether they knew about it or not, or MI6, I have no idea. I mean, it may be they didn't know. It may simply be that evidence which was passed, well, information passed to Peter Mandelson in his business secretary capacity, which he then sent on a personal basis to Epstein. You know, I don't think they would necessarily know about that. They wouldn't be monitoring him on a day-to-day basis to see what he was doing, because they don't monitor cabinet ministers on a day-to-day basis, as I know myself. You know, that doesn't happen. You are vetted before you take office as a minister, but you're not then subject to continual assessment, as it were, and nor should you be in a democracy, I don't think. So maybe, well, you didn't know about that. In terms of the Virginia Giuffre matters and others such as that, then quite clearly the royal family has significant questions to answer, because we had a photograph in 2011 of Andrew next to Epstein in Central Park. With the photograph, I think about the same time, which the Daily Mail published, over Andrew with his arm around Virginia Giuffre. So, I want to know, what did the royal family do about that at the time? They didn't not notice it. They must have noticed it. So did they ask Andrew questions? How much were they involved in paying off Virginia Giuffre? £12 million, allegedly. Where did that money come from? He said he never met her, of course, but I have to say, I've never met Prince Andrew either, as he was Prince Andrew. So perhaps he should give me £12 million on the basis that I've never met him either.
Yeah, and I mean, and this is occurring just a few miles away from the Palace of Westminster, all these rich elites in Mayfair and Knightsbridge. What do you think, we might have to return to the subject at the beginning of part two, about this conflicting reports, or at least no confirmation, that King Charles was involved in an element of the payout to shut up the trafficked and abused women?
I think it's probably quite likely, because the royal family's response to any difficult situation down the decades, first of all, you ignore it and pretend it goes away, wait for it to go away, rely on deference, rely on the short-term interest of the press and hope it all disappear from the headlines. If that doesn't work, you then ring-fence the problem in question, in this case it's Andrew, and say, nothing to do with us, mate, it's just him. And only then, when that fails to work, do they have to make a statement. Well, it's taken 15 years for Charles to make the statement he made recently, which, by the way, was a good statement, but 15 years too late, about what the police should do and where the royal family was on this matter. You know, £12 million is a lot of money, and I don't think Andrew had it at the time. So it was very likely it did come from other members of the royal family. We need to know that. We need to have full publication of any correspondence between members of the royal family and Andrew about these matters. And they've all been hidden away, those letters and emails. No doubt they exist within the palace. They should be made public. But I think that the royal family itself, beyond Andrew, has got questions to answer very much about what they knew when and what they did about it.
The Right Honourable Norman Baker, I'll stop you there. More from the former UK Crime Prevention Minister and Privy Councillor after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the former UK Crime Prevention Minister and former advisor to King Charles, the Right Honourable Norman Baker. Norman, we were talking about what members of the royal family knew about the sex trafficking and the shutting up of those who were abused, those that are powerless in societies, in NATO countries. I mean, what if it does come out? I mean, your latest book is Royal Mint National Debt, The Shocking Truth About the Royals' Finances. We do want you to come on and talk about that at a later date. Why don't we know that $1.5 million, which the Murdoch son claimed, pounds, I keep saying dollars, so about $1.8 million, why do we not know, and it's our money, our tax money, I was paying tax there at that time, would be used to shut people up who are victims of sex crimes. If it comes out that Charles did know that that was the use of the money, would he can't be arrested, he can't be charged with a crime because he's the reigning king. Would he be forced to abdicate?
I don't think he's forced to abdicate, but I think it would do significant damage to the image of the royal family, which already has suffered quite markedly, not simply with the Andrew business, but also over the last 30 years. We look at the polling back in 1983 about the popularity of the royal family. Some of that 83-84% were in support of the monarchy. It's down to 50% now, and that's a big drop over that period of time. And I think the deference has gone. The respect which Elizabeth II held, just basically because she'd been around for a very long time and then put a foot wrong in the public's mind, that's gone. And the royal family should justify its existence once again. And they're not doing very well. You say we'll talk about the book on another occasion, but let me just give you one statistic, because we're now looking at finances very closely, and the House of Commons has woken up to this. In 2011, the last year of the civil list, the previous system for funding the royals, they got 7.9 million on that handout from government. Last year or this year, they got 132.1 million. That's an enormous increase over 15 years. And you have to say, that's obscene. You don't have to be a Republican to think that that's obscene.
And just to put it into context, Britain's a country that, I mean, it is giving £22 billion to Zelensky in Ukraine. It just announced £500 million for Zelensky, £3 billion a year. So one could argue that sum for the royals is not much. But this is a country with 14.3 million people in poverty, one in five, 8.1 million in poverty of working age adults, one in three children are in poverty in Britain, 2 million pensioners in poverty. People in poorer areas live 18 years fewer in numbers of years, one of the starkest health inequality gaps in the developed world. Why has it taken this long? And I understand, I mean, as regards King Charles, I mean, there was one issue relating to here in the Gulf, not the UAE, but Qatar, bags of cash for King Charles.
Yes, and I exposed that too. And there was a letter. Well, there's been so many incidents with Charles that are in my book, actually. But there's receiving bags of cash, making yourself look like a mafia boss, is not a good look for the heir to the throne, as he then was. Euros in Harrah's bags. I suppose we should be grateful. It was Fortnum & Mason bags, I think. I suppose that market bags rather than Tesco's or something else. But look, I mean, that was clearly
people
a bad
won't know.
Look.
People won't know what these things are. Maybe they'll have heard of Harrods.
Well, yeah, basically, he received the money from an upmarket, one of the best upmarket stores in London, as opposed to a normal supermarket. That's about as good as it gets. Basically, he was still receiving loads and loads of euros in cash, like the mafia boss, just receiving this money. I mean, it was incredible. But it was also the occasion, which is in my book, about when he was a bit like Peter Mandelson with the dome, actually. He was actually encouraging someone to give him money in order to help his good causes. And in return, he offered to help them with his nationality application and also an honour. That was put in writing by Michael Fawcett, who was his right-hand man. It's in writing. I reported that to the Metropolitan Police. It's a clear example of an abuse of the honour system, apart from anything else, as well as corruption, in my view, and the police did nothing about it. And the police are now taking this matter with Andrew, it looks like, more seriously. But over the years, the police have done very little to challenge the royal family. There's a chapter in my book which is called Nothing to See Here, Move Along, which is the police attitude to the royal family.
Why is that? Why is the police corrupt in Britain?
Well, they're not corrupt, but they have deference to the royal family, which they shouldn't do. You know, everybody is equal under the law. I very much believe that's a former crime prevention minister. And if someone does something wrong, they should be dealt with. And the police have been using kid gloves when it comes to the royal family for far too long.
Well, some would say that is corrupt. Some would say that is corruption. Of course, the press have already been quick to introduce Prince William and his wife, Kate Middleton, to show that somehow they're different to the old guard. Charles, it should be said, the present king has cancer. You've also been looking at William's antics in terms of him doing fewer duties for more money.
Well, that's right. I mean, in fact, Charles, who's much older, of course, not by that. Nate's naturally much older and also has a cancer, as you say, was doing far more engagements last year than William was. And William has been spending a great deal of time, as I set out in my book, looking at matters to deal with the Duchy of Cornwall, which is a kind of royal slush fund which exists, where the money ought to go to the public purse and instead goes straight into William's pocket. And that produced about £25 million for him last year. He spent a great deal of time micromanaging that and to make sure he's appointed the people to the board of the Duchy of Cornwall who will be helpful to him. Investment bankers, property developers, people like that, to maximise his income. And there was a brilliant documentary on one of the terrestrial channels here, Channel 4, which demonstrated very clearly how the Duchy of Cornwall was eking out huge sums of money from people for access to Duchy of Cornwall property, so-called, including charging the NHS, the National Health Service, almost £1 million a year to put their ambulances in an empty warehouse, charging the Army to practice on Dartmoor, charging the Navy to moor ships next to the edge of some quay somewhere. I mean, it was pretty disgusting, to be honest with you. They are driven by money. They are driven by greed and driven by money. And William has got to change his attitude because, you know, the royal family's got one more go at this, I think. I mean, Charles may you know, stagger on till he meets his natural end. But, you know, after William, if William didn't get it right, the royal family's in big trouble.
But isn't that the point? That and Prince Andrew may well say this if he gets his day in court. This is endemic across British society. We know the corruption of the City of London is infamous right around the world for a den of iniquity. And in that sense, any trade envoy, Mandelson indeed in court, may talk about how this is something that's endemic in British society. It is a completely grossly unequal society where all these people are using their positions of power to enrich themselves. Whether it be prime ministers like Boris Johnson, whether it be arms companies, of course, very close to the royal family. You mentioned Dartmoor and corruption over procurement in the defense industry. This is just something generally there. How was Andrew not supposed to know as a trade envoy? He wasn't supposed to personally enrich himself and get a cut of the trade he was getting for the British people.
Well, I don't want to talk down my country. There are many good things about Britain,
Of course, we love our country. I don't mean it like that, but that doesn't mean we don't want it to be better.
It needs to be better, but I mean, look, I mean, the world is a dysfunctional place at the moment. The world's a very dysfunctional place. You've got, look who's running the world at the moment in terms of those who are in position to power in politics. You've got Trump, who's egotistical, narcissistic.
Democratically elected.
Incapable of having the same thought for 10 minutes running. You've got Xi Jinping, who's probably going to invade Taiwan. You've got Putin, who's illegally invaded Ukraine. You know, these are the people who are running.
But isn't this why things don't change in Britain? Because people go, well, you see, it's better than other countries in some ways. You don't see the pervasive influence of Israel in all of this. We only know about these allegations against Andrew and Peter Mandelson because of Epstein, who has been exposed as an Israeli asset. As I said, Ari Ben-Menashe, the source of the Samson option about nuclear suicide doctrine by the Israeli state, he came on this show and said Trump is being blackmailed. Trump, for all of what you've just said, did come in as a peace president, has been seeking negotiations over Europe, and has sought to... he got his mandate on that basis.
I'm sorry, you know, I can't accept that after. I mean, Trump is a warmonger. He's busy bombing around the world. And with the Israelis, he's just removed the elected government.
Starmer is trying to stop the negotiations on Ukraine. And as for Iran, that is the issue as regards Epstein, because Trump doesn't want a war with Iran, but is being forced to over the idea that Epstein allegations will be revealed that show him in a compromising position.
No. That's an allegation which you've made. I don't know if it's true or not, but it wouldn't surprise me if it were true. But Trump is not a peace president, for goodness sake. All these allegations about him stopping wars, I mean, stopping wars between countries that have never been at war in half the cases. India and Pakistan have denied he was anywhere near them.
You've forgotten he kidnapped. He also kidnapped a head of state as well. We shouldn't.
He did.
Shouldn't forget as well.
Let me say one thing about Andrew, and this is where it's Charles. Charles advised Blair in 2001 not to appoint Andrew as a trade envoy. And he was overruled by his mother. So he knew back in 2001 he was a wrong un.
And Charles himself, though, can't be arrested or charged because that's the way Britain works. Will all this come out in court, all these details? And if Andrew is a kind of fall guy for a larger conspiracy of silence, what will the authorities do to stop him being able to have his say? I mean, all he has is his personal, presumably, feelings of betrayal about his brother not sticking up for him.
Well, look, Andrew is a hugely discredited person, and nothing he says will be regarded with any seriousness by the public. Andrew is a very rude, arrogant person who's only put himself and his interests above the interests of his country. That's unforgivable, and I think the public will no longer listen to anything he says, to be honest with you.
But not the fall guy for a much larger conceptual...
No, he's not the fall guy. He's the extreme example of what can go wrong within the system. And not everybody pulls the levers as far as he will go. He did. Not everybody pulls the levers as far as he will go. There are plenty of honest people in politics in Britain. There are plenty of honest prime ministers. Gordon Brown was an honest prime minister. You know, because...
Well, he's an idiot then, wasn't he? Because he appointed Peter Mandelson. So he's an honest...
Well,
he financed the Iraq war, we got to remember as well, as Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Well, he had to, because it wasn't his call. It was a call of the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary at the time.
Okay, but I mean, well, look, tens of millions of people.
You made a bad call on Mandelson, but essentially he's an honest politician. I'm just telling you, he's not my party, but that's my judgment about where he is. John Major was mostly an honest politician. You know, there are grades of this. Boris Johnson's at one end and John Major at the other.
Big wars, of course, in Europe under John Major, one shouldn't forget. But the Right Honourable Norman Baker, hope you'll be giving advice to King Charles, as is your remit. Thank you. That's it for the show. Our continued condolences, of course, to those suffering the impact of the US-UK-EU armed bombing here in the Middle East. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new episode. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.